Do you ever have those people that threw produce into your Halloween basket? Like an apple? And not like a caramel-covered apple, just an apple? Who gives an apple? You just throw that thing away. I remember someone gave pencils. That's helpful. I'll use that to make a note not to go to your house next year for another pencil. I remember some people every once in a while. Remember one person handing out toothbrushes. Not real exciting, but that is a timely thing to hand out. And then, at least when I was growing up, it was a lot more common for people to put homemade goods inside a Halloween basket. Do you remember those days? Today, if someone puts a homemade popcorn ball in our kids' Halloween baskets, does anyone make popcorn balls anymore? Did anyone ever like popcorn balls when they were made before? If someone puts a homemade item in the basket, that's the first thing that's going in the trash, right? Because you're not feeding your kid some stranger's homemade item. Thank you. I appreciate your effort. I don't know you. That's where it goes. Well, these families outside of Fargo, North Dakota, they had a special surprise in their kids' Halloween basket. It was a note. And here's what it says. Happy Halloween and happy holidays, neighbor. Well, that's nice. You are probably wondering why your child has this note. Have you ever heard the saying, it takes a village to raise a child? That's a good idea. I'm disappointed in the village of Fargo, Moorhead, West Fargo. Your child is, wait for it, in my opinion, moderately obese and should not be consuming sugar and treats to the extent of some children in this Halloween season. In other words, when different kids walked up, it'd be like, candy, candy, you get a note. Candy, candy, you get a note. My hope is that you will step up as a parent and ration candy this Halloween and not allow your child to continue these unhealthy eating habits. Thank you. No, no. I and my moderately obese child, thank you, anonymous note writer. And it was pretty smart to leave that thing anonymous, right? You don't sign that. Now, don't you imagine that whoever came up with this and took the time to print it out and put it in the baskets, they thought they were doing a world of good. They felt noble and good and righteous, and they had done their deed as a part of this village to raise the child. But what kind of reaction would that invoke in you? Would it invite change? Or would it bring resentment and hurt and anger? And who do they think they are? And an attempt to figure out who it actually was? Is that the kind of thing where someone reads it and they say, you know, we've got a whole village behind us. This is fantastic. Or does it leave them feeling attacked and isolated and alone? I want to read another story. This was written by a woman. You'll see the picture behind me, Allie Brothers. She's a single mom, two young boys, and she posted this photo after a disastrous shopping trip with her two boys. And any parent with young kids who goes to the store knows you're playing Russian roulette in that experience. You never know what you're going to get. And this one, what she got was quite a doozy. And so this is what she wrote. This is a Facebook post. This is motherhood. No fancy filters, no good lighting, no new lipstick. It's messy hair that's wet from rain, yesterday's makeup that I was too tired to wash off, and tears. And after explaining that her toddlers were not so angelic in the supermarket aisles, she commented on the disappointing reactions of other shoppers. She said, "Everyone's eyes were on me with looks that said, 'Can't you control your children?' But they don't know me. They don't know me as a mother. They don't know my children. They don't know I left my marriage because of abuse, knowing I would have it just as hard as a single mother." If you see a parent struggling, she writes, if you see a child throwing a tantrum, if you see a mom on the verge of tears, please say something nice. Don't glare with judgment. And to all the moms out there having a day like mine, I see you, I know you, I love you. You are strong and you are doing just fine. There are parts of life, I don't have to tell you, that can just be hard. Days, seasons that are difficult. Work can be hard. Making ends meet can be hard. Marriage can be hard. Parenting can be hard. Single parenting can be hard. Living the life of faith can be hard. And in the midst of the struggle, usually the last thing we need is judgment. A word, a whisper, a glare, an anonymous note in the Halloween basket. Scripture has all kinds of warnings against judgment because it is so damaging to the one who receives it. And what we're also reminded is it's quite damaging to the one who dishes it out as well. Here's just a few of the warnings that show up. Matthew 7, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." Luke 6, 37, very similar teaching, but he gives sort of a reverse. "Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven." Romans 2, "You therefore have no excuse, you who pass judgment on someone else, for at whatever point you judge another, you are condemning yourself, because you who pass judgment do the same things." James 4, "There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But you, who are you to judge your neighbor?" Or Romans 14, "Who are you to judge someone else's servant? To their own master, servants stand or fall, and they will stand, for the Lord is able to make them stand." Or James 2, "Speak and act as those who are going to be judged by the law that gives freedom. Because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful. But mercy triumphs over judgment." The prohibitions are everywhere. So why are we still prone to it? Well, if we were being honest, we might say, because we're good at it. Because it comes naturally to us. Because sizing someone up makes us feel important and powerful and insightful. Because it makes us feel better about our own righteousness if we can see other people's places of unrighteousness. Because frankly, it's less work to size someone up from a distance and dismiss them than to have to get up close and personal and listen and care and engage in real relationship. And all these prohibitions against judgment doesn't mean that we don't still continually seek to discern the will of God in our lives, in our families, in our church, in our world. We do, we should, but we can discern without being damning. We can discern without being demeaning. And it's important to keep both of those in mind, because judgment is more than just condemnation. It can be that, but it's also often condescension, right? It is the looking down our nose at another, feeling superior and treating them as inferior. It's all those times when we leave people frozen in the past. A past idea, a past mistake, a past sin. We've got them pegged because 2 years ago they said this, and 5 years ago they did that. And forever in our mind, they will be that person, regardless of who they've become or how much time has passed. It's when we conclude that a few minutes of seeing their situation means we know their story. The kid is acting out, so it must be a bad parent or a bad kid. They're poor, so they must be lazy and abusing the system. They voted for this candidate, therefore they must be this kind of person. They are overweight, therefore they must not be trying. They're a different ethnicity, and then we fill in the gap of the stereotype that comes to mind. It's when we act like we've developed the ability to mind read. Oh, I know why she didn't talk with me at church. It's because she's a snob. It's because she must not think that I'm important enough, that I look good today, that I'm that kind of person. Often we think we can read minds, and when we do, we often assume the worst and are quick to assign blame and motive. So this week's challenge in our one-day series, in which each week we consider a different virtue or vice and how we can engage that, either practicing a virtue or abstaining from a vice. And this week we come to one day without judgment. And this applies to the stranger at the store and the man panhandling on the street, your coworker or boss, your spouse or kids or parents. My first encouragement in your one day without judgment is this: when you feel yourself tempted to judge, turn the spotlight back on you. Paul reminds us in Romans 12, don't think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment. You remember the warning that Jesus gives in Matthew 7 and in Luke 6. Before you try to take that speck out of someone else's eye, spend some time on the plank in your own. When those instincts towards judgment pop up, turn it back into a time of self-reflection. What are those places for which I need to work on? Sins for which I need to confess? Shortcomings that I have and I've had for a long time? What is it about this situation or this person that leaves me prone to judge? What does that say not just about them, but what does it say about me? How can I become a better person? Where are the places that I've struggled as a parent or a spouse or a friend or a Christ follower? And how can I work on those? And the second is this: don't assume the worst. Don't be quick to assign blame. Leave room for a different story. In the absence of information, we often make up stories about people. Have you noticed? We make up stories in our mind as to why they do this thing and not that thing, why they say this thing and not that thing. And when marriages are distant, and when we're struggling with a coworker, we often fall into the rut of assuming we know what they're thinking, assuming we know their motivation instead of talking to them. It's what author Brené Brown calls our sorry first draft. We're writing a story about that person in our head. It's just not a very good or accurate story yet. It's a story we're telling ourselves as to why he didn't call and why she isn't speaking to me and why they said this and not that. It's because she doesn't respect me. It's because he thinks he's better than me. It's because she no longer finds me attractive. It's because. And the reality is we don't always know. And there could be 1,000 different explanations. But we've landed on one that's not so flattering and not so encouraging, and we have a hard time moving past. So part of the encouragement is this: when possible, ask instead of assume. Dialogue instead of immediately distance. You may be very intuitive, but you're still not a mind reader. So have a conversation with someone who's close. And before all that, or when information is difficult to come by, why not assume the best instead of the worst? After all, mercy triumphs over judgment. In the absence of information with a spouse or a stranger, it doesn't make you naive to try to offer them, first of all, the benefit of the doubt. It seems to me that that's kind of a golden rule sort of action, right? Because that's what we hope others will do for us. In the absence of information, give us the benefit of the doubt. And Jesus reminds us, when you show mercy, that's when mercy is shown to you. And the last one is this: replace condemnation and condescension with confession and compassion. Before you mumble a critique, as those thoughts come to your mind, try to first offer a prayer to God instead, on their behalf and your behalf. And if you see someone has sinned, like a friend has sinned, and if you, in fact, have ever been a sinner, then maybe acknowledge that. Maybe recognize that. And not just internally, God came to save sinners of whom I am the worst, although that's a part of it, but maybe with them. Man, I have been there. Maybe not that exactly, but I know what it is to do the thing I don't want to do or I'm not proud of doing. I understand that. I've been there. Let's walk together toward a new place. And when you see someone struggling, like a parent struggling with a child in the store or restaurant or at church, offer an understanding smile instead of a scowl. Offer support. Offer encouragement. I can't tell you how much this has meant to us through the years when people have offered support instead of critique. Now, some of you know, but a few of you may not know, that our son, Max, is an amazing, sweet, lovable giant of a six-year-old with some special needs that occasionally leave him misunderstood and definitely keep us on our toes. And a lot of you know that this summer he had an unprovoked prolonged seizure that left him in ICU for a couple of days, and it terrified us in the process. But what some of you know, maybe not as many of you know, is that was just sort of the tip of the iceberg, that some of what caused that are some spots on the brain and a few genetic mutations that sort of contribute to, as we like to say it, making Max, Max. I knew there was a chance I'd get worked up a little bit. I told him I was going to talk about him. And he asked me to make sure that I told you Avengers Assemble. So that's, we'll get that one out there. He's just got some challenges. Some things that make Max, Max. A sensory disorder that makes times like church and other gatherings really difficult. And so Paige, for years, has been out with him so I can do what I do. I'm going to pull it together here so I can breathe. And what people may not know is that he goes to about 4 to 5 different therapies every week, multiple times a week. And what they may not know is the different delays that he has, or that he's got some sort of sleep issue that we're trying to figure out that means that maybe 1 night out of 7 a week he doesn't wake up with some serious interruption. So it leaves him kind of tired, and not to mention that the anti-seizure medicine that he's on creates tiredness and moodiness. Or that we're doing several hours of testing tomorrow to better understand him. And Paige and I are there for one another, and she could not be a better mother and an advocate for him. And it is a joy, both of our kids, such a blessing. But as I said, he keeps us on our toes. And occasionally, there are some ways of Max being Max that people might misunderstand. And that's because most people don't know the story, and it's impossible for them to know the story unless we try to print that on a t-shirt for him to wear everywhere he goes. It sort of lays out all the things that go into Max being Max. They don't know. And so we occasionally get the kind of look of judgment or a word of judgment or condescension. And we have learned to let that roll off our back, mostly. I'm learning. Is that a better way to say I'm learning? Most of the time, I'm learning. We've learned. And we have learned to try to never judge another because we don't know their story. We may think we know their story. I used to think I was really intuitive at knowing stories, and I've got some good intuitions, but I don't know. And so some of it has been a cause for repentance for those times when I have been judgmental. And some of it is a call to insist on not being judgmental toward others, the kids or the parents. And it's also meant trying to give whoever gives that condescending look or has said some things that they shouldn't say, try to give them the mercy that I want them to give us. To try to think and assume the best for them because I know there's an absence of information, things they don't know that I know. But here's why I tell that story, partially just because we welcome your ongoing prayers, but it's more than that. I tell that story mostly because we have had countless people, including countless people in here who have been compassionate and kind instead of critical and condescending. And I can tell you, and you know, whenever you're going through something that is difficult and someone is compassionate and kind instead of condemning and condescending. That is manna from heaven. It is the support and the encouragement that you need. Did you know that when researchers poll individuals who identify themselves as either non-Christian or those who don't go to church, that at the top of the list, almost every time, one study I read only a couple of years ago from the Barna Group, which is a Christian group, says that 87% of those who say they don't go to church, when they think of church or Christians, the thing they think of the most is the word judgmental. Now, don't you want to be a part of the solution instead of feeding the problem? Because here's the thing. Judgment robs life. Mercy gives life and hope and renewed strength. And what we've been reminded this morning is in the end, when it's all said and done, every time mercy triumphs over judgment. Let's stand and sing together.